I have an absolutely stunning book in front of me that I want to tell you about. 2 years ago, David Creedon was driving through a rural county Sligo and he happened upon an abandoned house. He stopped his car to have a look and he discovered it was being used as an animal shelter. Amid the remnants, though, were such things as a pink dress hanging in a wardrobe that belonged to its previous inhabitants. It set David off on a quest throughout the country to photograph the interiors of similarly deserted dwellings. And he's put together these now, the photographs, in a beautiful book called Ghosts of the Faithful Departed. And he joins us this morning for our News Talk studios in Cork's Opera Lane. David, good morning.
Morning, Tom. How are
you? How are you today?
I'm not too bad, thank you.
Lovely to talk to you, and congratulations on an absolutely beautiful and haunting book.
Thank you very much.
It all started that morning. You were in your car. Tell me about that.
I was sitting in the back seat of a friend's car, and we were just driving along, and for some reason I just said, stop the car, as I caught a glimpse of a house out of the corner of my eye. And I went back in to the house. The house was open. The doors were open. There was no windows. And I went in, and there was sheep droppings on the floor. And so I went upstairs and I had a look. And when I opened the door of this blue bedroom, as you described, perfectly described it, with a pink dress hanging in a wardrobe, the hair literally stood on the top of my head.
Why did it affect you so strongly?
I have no idea why it affected me. I wasn't expecting it. And I took a number of photographs there. And a couple of months later, I was driving in Kerry and I saw a house that looked kind of similar. It looked like abandoned.
Yeah.
And again, I went in and I had a look and I went upstairs and there was nothing upstairs. And when I came back down, I went into one of the side rooms and there was a piano and next to it was a chair with the Sacred Heart.
Yeah.
And over the weekend, it was an August bank holiday, I showed him to a friend of mine and he said, you know, there's a house up the road just like that. Why don't you go and have a look? And I went up and had a look and I took a few photographs there. And before I realised that I had a portfolio,
yeah.
But there was everything after that was kind of serendipitous as well, because I met a woman called Sarah McCarthy. And Sarah loved them so much that she wanted to exhibit them. And I said, where to her? Where will we exhibit? And she says, we'd open here in Chicago.
Yeah.
And we opened in Chicago in October 2006. And I think there's not a month gone by that they haven't been exhibited somewhere in the world.
It's incredible. I can understand exactly why you can't take your eyes off them when you look at them. They give a sense of a life interrupted or a life
they do,
abandoned
and
or something.
I always felt it when I was in the houses that somebody was going to walk in and say, what are you doing here?
I
felt a presence in all those houses. And then there were stories you'd find out and side stories. Because I'm a very patient photographer in regard to composition and taking my photographs, I'd be waiting for light to come around. It gave me a chance to kind of become a forensic scientist and go through letters from people that wrote in America.
Yeah.
And I remember coming across one letter from a gentleman in New York, and it was written in 1974. And he said to his friend in West Cork, I suppose I'll always be in exile. I'll never make it home now.
Wow.
And it was those kind of things.
That's very powerful at the moment, yeah. Isn't it? Because a lot of people talking about maybe having to, you know, shut up shop and follow those people over the oceans again to seek out new lives. These are the remnants of the life they left behind, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and somehow it looked like, you know, the last activity was the waking of the dead, because you'd go in and
really?
You'd find cases of beer,
oh, really?
and stuff all over the place. And I came across work that was done by Dr. Breda Gray, who was with UCC at the time, who did an oral archive about people who stayed behind in an immigrant society of the 1950s.
Mm.
And what she had brought together, really, she kind of verbalized what was going through my head. And she had done this magnificent project. And, you know, you started to discover things about people's lives, what it was like to live in Ireland of the 50s. I remember there was one audio tape of a gentleman from Sligo again,
yeah,
who was 14, and he got wind that his brothers were thinking of emigrating. And he didn't want to get stuck working in the farm or looking after his parents. So he hightailed it down to Belmullet to get a boat to Scotland.
Yeah.
And that's the way it was for people who lived in rural societies of the 1950s.
Yeah. When were the majority of these places abandoned, do you know?
Well, do you know, when I used to go in, the first thing I'd look for was a calendar.
Yeah.
And some of them were as late as 1986.
Okay.
And, you know, but I did find one calendar that said 1964.
Right.
So it could have been any time there. But the stories they told, and I remember going into a house in West Cork, and it was extremely dark, and I went up the stairs, and there was a glimpse of red caught my eye. And when I looked at it, there was the Star Spangled Banner was hanging in the hallway.
Yeah.
With 48 stars, right, which predates it to 1949. And, you know, and it hung at an angle of 45 degrees and reminded me of that famous photograph of the American soldiers putting the flag on Iwo Jima.
Yeah.
And when you went into the next room, there was a shipping trunk and there was two labels on the shipping trunk. And the first label said United States Lines to All America.
Yeah.
And the second label said Mary O'Sullivan, 16th of August, 1949, SS America, New York to Cove. And Mary was coming home.
She came home.
And when you opened the case,
right,
there were still ladies' nylon stockings in their original packaging, yeah, with Nylons by DuPont embossed at the top.
Right.
And there was also her passport.
Really?
And there was also her bank book, where she had taken out $8,000 she had saved.
$8,000 back in 1949. That was a fortune.
And then when I went to Ellis Island to do research on her, yeah, going there.
Yeah.
And she had gone out in 1930 on the White Star Liner, the Cedric.
Right.
And she had $15.
My God. Now that's just 18 years after the,
yeah,
Titanic. And it's the White Star Line as well. So it's the same people who owned the Titanic. Do you know what class she went over? Do you know?
Well, she went over on tourist class on the Cedric.
Yeah.
But when she came back on the SS America, she came back cabin class. And there was three classes of passenger on the SS America. There was first class, cabin class, and tourist class.
Right.
And Mary had kept everything, including the menus on her return voyage. And on the menu, she could choose from wild Irish smoked salmon or caviar.
She made a success for herself in,
yes,
America. Isn't that incredible? And do we know what she did when she was in America?
No, I don't know, but I know she died a few years after that. But then there was side stories that I found out, like her sister had gone over in 1912 and her sister had come back in 1939,
yeah,
and got trapped in Ireland
for the war.
During the war. And I had letters from the American embassy in Ireland who,
yeah,
were telling her, look, the American government have ships to take American citizens back to America. And would she travel to Galway to get on one of these?
Yeah.
But she didn't go. And subsequently, there was another letter came saying, look, if you're out of America for more than 5 years, you will lose your citizenship.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, okay, there was subsequently something went through Congress so people would retain their citizenship.
Right. You really just wonder about Mary coming back. Mary coming back as a success to the old homestead.
Yeah.
$8,000, a fortune. She could have bought several houses.
And it was really, the house was in a very isolated part of West Cork. No other houses around.
Yeah. I mean, my parents paid something like $1,200 for their house in 1963,
yeah,
or something like that. So, God, she would have got several. She could have been a landlord. But bringing back nylons, that's the classic World War II,
yeah,
luxury, isn't it?
Yeah, and even there was, in that trunk, there was stuff she never used. There was a handbag and there was letters from, you know, letters from home and receipts from the church in New York. And hanging behind the door was a dress, still with its purchase label still intact. And I always wondered, were items of fashion in New York or Queens not suitable of West Cork in the 1950s?
Yeah, you'd really wonder. The poignancy of it all is incredible, isn't it? The things they carried, I think, is the name of the book once, and this is the things these people carried. And as you go through it, I mean, her story is absolutely remarkable, but the number of Sacred Hearts in the book is unbelievable, isn't it?
Well, there was two things. The Sacred Hearts, there was a whole lot of them, and you don't see them in houses now. But certainly when I grew up in the 60s in Cork, my mother had every room decorated with the Sacred Heart or the Infant of Prague or something. And West Cork, or all over Ireland, was exactly the same in rural communities. And the other thing that struck me was the colours, the intense colours I found in all these houses.
I noticed that.
My mother used to only ever paint her house magnolia.
Yes.
And you go into these and these were vibrant pinks and blues and greens. And it was incredible to look at. And, you know, it was like, if it was the only paint around at the time, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, it's funny. They're very strong, powerful colours. Dark navies and blood reds and whites.
And I tried to keep the accuracy of the colours right, and I used chip off paint and
put
it into a plastic bag and bring it to my printer, Colin Leahy.
Yeah.
And say, you know, this is what we're matching here.
Right. The fascination with the lives these people may have led and what happened to them is just, it's the whole power of it really, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's one, I don't know if now this will ring any bells with you, but there's a photograph in it and it's a mantelpiece with a bell on it. It looks like a book underneath it. There's a Cilician of Don Bosco calendar on the wall.
Yeah.
And then there's a photograph of this really beautiful woman. It has to be like the 1910s or something like that. Very fashionable hairstyle on her and stuff. Do you find any look there?
I can remember the photograph. I think it was taken in Sligo.
Really?
And but I came across a lot of photographs on the wall. I remember on mantelpieces. I remember one coming across one, and it had this also 1930s style woman, and next to her was a gentleman in a U.S. military uniform. And I kind of wondered what happened to these people. Who are they?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the questions I was asking for myself, other people were asking the same questions. And when I went on tour in Eastern Europe and London, and it had a whole resonance with people all over the world.
I can understand it. There was another one that really stopped me in my tracks as well, and it was a piano on an abandoned piano, but on the wall a diploma from the Royal College of Music from 1903.
There was diplomas all over, and it was a music teacher's house.
Right.
But that's about all I could gather, because some of the houses were extremely dangerous, and I don't even think some of them exist still anymore, you know.
It's an incredible. Did you find it moving, as a matter of
interest? I did.
Yeah.
I found it extremely moving. And before we opened in Chicago, there was, you know, I had the pictures here at home ready to be shipped. And I never told anybody I was working on it. But friends called and they started looking at them and they were leaving crying.
I can understand.
And an editor rang me from London and saying, look, the tears are rolling down my cheeks looking at these. And I found the same reaction when it went abroad at exhibitions. I've had people coming up apologising that they had to leave because they found it so emotional.
Really? It's funny, isn't it? You look at it, there's just fireplaces, hearts, a Honda 50, bikes, cars, tractors. The shoes, I find, for whatever reason, very powerful. And I had a man on about the Titanic the other day, and he was talking about the sea floor around the Titanic covered in shoes. And I have to say, he had a scientist's eye for it. He just saw them as shoes. And I was thinking, the night before the Titanic sank, people were putting those little shoes outside their door, planning to wear them the next day. And when this, you see them, you wonder how they ended up under the bed, never to be worn again, and where the people who wore them are gone.
I think there's a set in the book as well where somebody had nailed a horseshoe onto the end of it.
Right. They used to do that in the old days, all right. It's a beautiful book, it really is. And I think one of the powers of it is that you can just take a photograph and stare at it and wonder, and you can contextualise it. You can imagine Mary Sullivan coming back and telling people about her time in America, and the money she has could change their lives and the lives of all the people around her who'd stayed here. It really is incredible, isn't it?
It's fantastic. And I think sociologists who would look at that book would probably say they're sites of memory, because I think people who looked at these images were reminded of their own youth, and they might see a kettle or something and they say, we had one of those at home. And
I think
that's where the response was from a lot of people.
We certainly had the Sacred Heart, I'll tell you. I saw it going into the bin myself. He won't be photographing that one, David, I'm afraid.
No, I don't think so.
Well, listen, congratulations on it. It's an absolutely beautiful book. Ghosts of the Faithful Departed, a reference to the Radiators from Space Song, I presume, David?
The title came from two songs, actually. In the first house that I photographed, all I kept thinking was Eamon Carr's words about that he'd written on ghosts on the Horslips album.
Yeah.
And the you were correct on the second one, which was the Philip Chevron song.
Yeah.
And it was just a matter of putting the two of them together.
Beautiful, beautiful. I think the Philip Chevron song is one of the best Irish songs ever. An absolute gem. David, a pleasure talking to you this morning.
Thank you, Tom.
The book is going to be fought over now in the office. I'd say we'll be stripping naked and arm wrestling to see who gets to bring it home. So thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much indeed,
Lovely talking to you. Thanks
Bye.
Very much.